You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Sleep in Society. Today, I have a guest with me that I have known for a very, very long time, Miles Breckenberry. Miles and I go way back. I have known him since my child was in grade one. I have seen Miles grow up into a fantastic human being that he is, and I can't wait for this conversation to start. Welcome, Miles.
Thanks for having me, Ruhi.
Thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Yeah, beautiful sunny day here.
Yeah, inside.
Just get the sunlight coming through the window.
Oh, that's nice. You're getting your vitamin D.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. Since this is Sleep in Society, I think I want to start with your sleep. How is your sleep these days in these interesting, challenging, wonderful existence that we are experiencing right now?
I've got to say it has been good for sleep, is one thing. I definitely feel I'm getting 9 to 10 hours every night and feeling refreshed, but there's definitely that lag in the afternoon just when you don't have the same schedule and continuity where sometimes you feel that fatigue. But otherwise, at nighttime, I'm sleeping like a log.
Okay, so I want to explain that you are just wrapping up your first year of university at Queen's.
Yes, that's right.
And now, since everything has gone online because of the pandemic, your schedule's changed a little bit, yeah?
Yes, definitely. What used to be lectures and a lot of walking around on campus and having a few hours of lectures, tutorials each day has turned into now a lot of self-regulation, working my day around meals and one, maybe two Zoom calls, and otherwise everything else is completely independent.
And how's that going? How do you find the process? Is it challenging for you? Is it difficult? Or is this something you kind of adapted and quickly adapted yourself to?
I think it took a couple of days to fully adapt and to become as productive at home without a schedule as I was on campus with libraries and a stricter schedule keeping me moving throughout the day. But once I had a few days, I had the opportunity to kind of get used to it and realize where I was doing my best work. And that allowed me to make sure that I set certain times of the day aside where I was the most productive, and then took the other time to relax, exercise, and do something that I enjoyed.
So, Miles, you are at home now with your family. Were you at home during? Have you been at home during this entire time at Queen's, or did you come back home right after isolation measures took place?
Yeah, so I live a 10-15 minute walk from campus, so I've been staying at home all year, which did make the transition a little easier for myself than it has been on many of my friends and classmates, because I wasn't relocating in terms of where I sleep and where I eat. I've been at home all year, and I've really enjoyed that experience, but it was a change in terms of not going to campus. Usually I'm at campus from 9 to 5, sometimes later, and all of a sudden my home base was my campus as well.
And that shift, has that... do you find, as I said, do you find it challenging not being able to see your professors, not being able to see your friends, and having this process of self-regulation now. Can we go a little bit into that?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult and very different. I feel like I've gotten to a point where I'm used to talking to people through social media, through Zoom, and it does give you your social fix. I'm still lucky to have professors who make themselves available, friends who are at my fingertips, but it's not the same. It's not quite the same as that face-to-face interaction that we all really enjoy and look for in our day-to-day. I myself love social interaction, so it was definitely a huge shift for me, and there were a few days of just kind of that blah feeling moving through the day. But what school has done for me, and what I'm thankful for, but what I'm scared of when this term does finish in the next couple weeks, is what do I do with my time when school is finished, kaput? Because even though it's not the same, even though I don't get that same face-to-face interaction, school is something I'm still passionate about, something that gets me up in the morning and keeps me working.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, it's different, but on the other hand, the continuity in the content and the topics that I'm in. So there's still just enough structure to help me through the day. But I feel like soon that structure will be gone, and then there's going to be another transition, which may even be even harder.
So you normally, I mean, you have a summer job. You've had jobs throughout your school year. And did you have a summer job lined up?
I did, actually. Between the local running store, Runner's Choice, and the Queen's Gym, I was going to be working at both of those places this summer as a worker at the running store, helping people find shoes, and at the gym, just checking people in, signing them up for summer camps and those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. And so now those options are no longer on the table at the moment anyway.
Yeah, at the moment, it seems not. So I'm starting to look into possibly some online courses this summer, to have a little bit of structure, some productivity, and also going to be talking to some people about phoning people who are all alone in these times, checking in with them. Lots of people in the community are volunteering to do groceries or household tasks like yard work that people can't perform if they're vulnerable or alone at home.
Yeah. So this, you, besides, you know, your stellar academic interests, which, by the way, it, you know, you're pretty awesome, and I've known you for a long time.
You flatter me.
I am. We are very proud of you, Miles. And you are also an athlete, and been heavily, you know, involved in athletics throughout your high school and as well as in university, is that right?
Yes, I've had the pleasure of running on the cross-country and track teams this year. And aside from my academics, that's where most of my time goes, running every day. And I've really enjoyed that experience. I know you love the endurance as well. Are you still skipping?
I had to, funnily... For the past 6 months, I've been doing slow movement training, which I needed to kind of, you know, as we age, especially with, like, with women and especially with me, as we age, like, every couple of years, I need to reconfigure where I am physically with myself just to reduce, like, inflammatory processes. So
yes, yeah.
Every 2 years, I have to check my form with my coach. So I had been doing for 6 months slow movement training, which I'm really glad that I had spent that much time doing that, because this is what I'm working on right now. Nice. On slow movement. And now that I'm not doing nights, I am slowly going back into endurance and high intensity training, and yeah, getting my areas ready for skipping, which is my favorite form of exercise.
Yeah.
Ever. Yes. So what are you doing, by the way, now? Are you still running?
Yeah. So now is an interesting time. Fortunately, I'm still able to run on my own. Social distancing has been easier because the roads are relatively empty, and recent studies have come out about just how cautious you have to be as a runner, because like particles can fly even further when there's a wind and mm-hmm. when you're moving at a fast speed.
So interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So I definitely feel a lot of weight on my shoulders there, trying to get that exercise and maintain the high level of endurance that I've built up towards, but also being very conscious, giving well over 6 feet, 10 feet more mm-hmm. when running, and finding those areas in the city that have the least traffic, for sure. So it's definitely been interesting maneuvering there, and then also very interesting because we don't know what is next. Normally you have a race on the horizon that you're looking forward to
or preparing for,
and all of those goals that you typically orient around some form of competition in the future are up in the air. So it looks like there won't be any official racing. Anything I do now will just be me and my watch. It'll be between us. Mm-hmm. It won't be for the world to see or for my friends to witness or experience with me. So that's definitely a little disappointing, but it does enable for this interesting shift where all of a sudden we're playing a long-term game. And with endurance sports, a long-term game can mean you're very successful and very fit in the future, when you don't need to make sacrifices or orient yourself to the short term. So I think mm-hmm. with a lot of endurance sports, or at least personally, I'm hoping with my own fitness that when we get through this together, there'll be some spectacular performances from people who have just been working away, building a very strong base without having to spend any time on the short term, and in the long term, it could be big breakthroughs for a lot of athletes.
Amazing! I didn't even think about that at all. Yeah, because now the focus is also quite internal too, right? The motivation itself is something very different from if you have like a race coming up or a competition coming up. There's like a goalpost that you have. But right now, those are all the great unknowns. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be very interesting. Actually, I would love to have this conversation with you in a couple of months' time as well,
yeah,
to see where
sure.
you're at in terms of your training and your motivation. Because I'm finding it difficult because everything was very scheduled for me, right? I had prior to this, I knew like on my night shift, when I was doing night shifts, when I needed to train, when I was like my times with my coaches were booked, my times for that self-training was booked. And now there's this incredible shift. It's both like fantastic in a way as well, because I'm not doing night shifts, which is like for me, one of the greatest opportunities ever. To do this study now where I am going to be not doing night shifts for a prolonged period of time to see what happens in terms of my sleep, in terms of my inflammation, and I can really test my limits in terms of my exercise and endurance training too. Because now I'm for the first time, I think, Miles, in like 2 decades that I am getting my circadian rhythms are going to be somewhat aligned. I'm going to bed when I'm tired and I'm waking up, and I know exactly how long a sleep I need all of those things and see where my inflammatory markers are. So I think it's also, for me, it is a phenomenal opportunity, especially when I'm looking at like my own study and I'm looking at like the science of it, because this will give me a fantastic data to compare to the past 10 years of data that I've been collecting as a shift worker.
Yeah, that will be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let's see like what comes out of that one. But at the same time, the process of self-regulation, which is my main thesis, is also a difficult thing, because it's not just I'm navigating myself. I also, I have a teen in my house, and I have also my husband, and we're all trying to coordinate with one another the schedules and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So you are, what are you doing at Queen's right now? What's your area of interest and area of study at the moment?
Yeah, so currently I'm in first year, so I have yet to declare a major, but I'm leaning towards the Global Development Studies program here at Queen's, possibly political studies. I'm currently weighing my options, and I'm really interested in both of those areas, which is making that decision all the harder. I have lots of time to contemplate now, and I'm also in the concurrent education stream as well, which means that after my undergrad, I'll complete a year and a half of teacher's college.
Oh, okay. What got you interested in global development?
Global development is something that just fit all of my areas of interest into one. It kind of combines geography with politics and international studies and this kind of idea of social justice that I've always been interested in since I was young.
And can we talk a little bit about that? How did you get so interested in social justice? And do you recall when that shift happened?
Yeah, I think what started as a kid as a need for fairness and inclusion kind of grew into an interest in social justice, because as a kid I always wanted to make sure that people were following rules and being inclusive and not being mean to one another. I was someone who would always, in my mind, be keeping track of the score and who did this, who did that, making sure that everyone was feeling included and participating. And that was something that was just me as a child. And I've always strived to make people around me happy and feel welcome. And mm-hmm. I feel like I was very fortunate to grow up in a neighborhood, our neighborhood, where that was the case. And that's what I grew up knowing. And that's what I brought to every social interaction and everywhere I went. So as I got older and I started to realize that this isn't the case everywhere. In fact, it might not even be the normal.
Within our city.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It made me sad to think of that, but I also, having seen it as a child and continuing to see it to this day, I see how possible it is. So I've kind of made it my personal mission to see how can this be possible for more people. How can mm-hmm. more people have the childhood that I feel so fortunate to have had, or at mm-hmm. least have some form of that childhood? Doesn't need to be a replication, but at least something that's oriented around the same values of being a good neighbor, being welcoming mm-hmm. and inclusive.
Yeah, having the community that we have, and I cannot state this enough, that how unique the McBurney Park neighborhood community actually is. In it's not just the fact that we are all inclusive, which we are very much so, but I was thinking about the other day after, you know, you and I had our conversation on the phone. I was thinking if we started looking at per capita activism, I think it's like probably fairly high within this community in terms of like not just activism, but caring for our neighbors and for our community and for our children. Like we've built entire systems around it. And you're right. Like it's a very unique neighborhood and it has such wonderful qualities. And you don't see that until you kind of get out of here or people coming in from other communities or other places have actually commented on the fact that how unique this neighborhood actually is. Mm-hmm. So you have, you're thinking about social justice, you're thinking about global development, and you're also thinking about teaching. That's a lot. And politics on top of that.
Yes.
Any ideas as to now that you have a moment to rest and think about things, like especially under our current circumstances, and we're seeing how different countries are reacting to this pandemic. Do you have any particular leanings right now, you're thinking?
It's interesting. What I find is I'm trying to figure out right now, and university is a great place to do it, is where can I make the biggest impact with my interests, my skill sets, and my goals? And right now, in the long term, I'm kind of looking towards politics or looking towards like non-governmental organizations and trying to see which one is for me and where I can help the most people and be the best listener. Because in the end, it's not about imposing my ideas. It's about both of those organizations are for listening to what people need and delivering it to them. And this pandemic has really shown the importance, in my opinion, of a government and the government's role in something of this scale. A lot of people can be upset with the government, but in the end, a government is the biggest, community that people conform to when it comes to dealing with this sort of situation. And I think the Canadian government has been doing, has been taking significant measures. There can always be doing more, but it's interesting to see how different governments are reacting. And that definitely makes me see how important, politics are, even in an issue of health and wellness. And then at the same time, NGOs and charities are very important. So it's just, it's all fueling this debate that I've already been having with myself about both are important. Which one do I want to pursue? And time will tell.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea. I think NGOs are more grassroots and they're actually looking at and directly dealing with the issues of the citizens, where the governments are, you know, policymakers. And I think NGOs and political systems need to work together towards a better system for all of the citizens, not just for the few as we are seeing, which I'm not going to get into like a political thing right now, but, you know, we can see those issues being highlighted in various nations when
different
governments are reacting differently. And you can see which one are more humane and which are very anti-human. And I feel fortunate to be part of this awesome country and to be citizen of Canada, actually, to tell you the truth. I think it'll be, hopefully we'll look at it more from a perspective, not just, as I say, not just from like local or provincial or national, but more of a global perspective on how, where we want the humanity to be. So, which brings me to this interesting things about how you are, we talked earlier about adapting to these circumstances, especially within yourself. And I'm very interested because I want to get to help like all our youth right now that are being isolated, and now all of a sudden they have to be studying at home and doing online things and have to learn the process of self-regulation, which is a very difficult thing for most humans, let alone teens whose brain is still developing those self-regulatory processes. Can you talk to them about a little bit about what tools you're using to be able to self-regulate yourself? Like, what is your process? What is your routine like right now, Miles? What do you do from when you get up to when you go to bed?
Yeah, for sure. So for me with self-regulation, I think one of the most important things is to know yourself and know that you're not perfect. Know that not every second of the day has to be productive. The goal isn't to work from 12 to 12 straight, no breaks, 100% productivity. It doesn't work that way. So it's just to be self-aware and work with what you've been dealt. So for me personally, I find I function best, at least in a system where I get to dictate my sleep schedule. I function best when I sleep in to at least 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. I know your circadian rhythms.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. When I have class, obviously, I'll go to bed early. I'll wake up a bit earlier as well. But if I could choose, I like waking up with the sun coming in my window, and that's around 9 to 10 o'clock in the morning. So I find I get up then. Right now, it's hard to hit the ground running exactly. So I have breakfast. I read. I ease into the day, and then personally, the key time for me to get work done is between 11 and like 3 or 4. Though that's when I find I'm at my highest productivity. Mm-hmm. So in that time frame, I try to make sure that I'm working away at either a mental list or a physical checklist in an agenda, however you like to work. And working through those tasks, taking like snack breaks, like where necessary, like having a brief lunch. Sometimes I find if the mental juices aren't really flowing, like I need to say eat lunch and watch a TV show. And at that point, it feels like I'm killing two birds with one stone. And mm-hmm. it kind of feels like you're saving time, but that's where it's important to say, like, limit yourself to a show, mm-hmm. not shows plural or movie, because all of a sudden that saps out a lot of your time. So just knowing when you're the most productive. Like myself, I really like working in that midday window, being as productive as I can, and then kind of toning it down after dinner and later into the evening, mm-hmm. and getting my exercise in once I've finished my work, and then eating, and then toning it down for the night. That's how I like to function, and that's how I've been functioning since we've transitioned to this like work from home online structure. So I'd say for all those people in high school and university, like doing exams, it's not about forcing yourself to work unproductively for hours on end. It's about taking care of yourself and finding when do I work the most? When do I kind of enjoy working? Like some people aren't going, like depending on the content, you're never going to love it. But there's a certain point where you get the most satisfaction and the most like joy from your work. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's in the middle of the day. And mm-hmm. so that's what I try to work around.
Yeah. And also like this process called chunking process, where you give yourself, you know, 20 to 25 minute window of really hard work, and then a 10 minute break or a 15 minute break, which I do with my child all the time, mm-hmm. especially during exams. This is how we process. We go, okay, so we're going to divide it up into these chunks where we're going to focus on this particular work. We're going to focus. And if we go a little bit further, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, but knowing that brain can only process so much within a small window. Like if you're going at it for like 2-3 hours, sometimes, as you said, that's not a productive way to go because it tires itself out and you're not getting the maximum that you could be getting. So mm-hmm. maybe also dividing the time up, 25 minute window, and then especially during exam time, I would have Lucas do some exercise in between or just listen to some music mm-hmm. every half an hour or so. But it's a you called it something else the other day when we were talking about your professor.
Yes,
mentioned this technique.
Yeah, it was some of the best advice I had. My politics professor, Jonathan Rose, he's close by. Mm-hmm. He gave some of the best advice. He dedicated some of his first lectures of the term to study strategies, and he called it the Pomodoro technique. Mm-hmm. Which is Italian for tomato, like the derived from those tomato kitchen timers mm-hmm. that you would spin. It's that exactly, that 25 minutes of productivity with then a 10 minute or so break, 25 minutes of productivity. And that really has helped me along, because sometimes you find something that you can work on because maybe you're very passionate about it, mm-hmm. or maybe you're enjoying it, but everyone has that thing that is a struggle, and it's hard to convince yourself to do it. It's hard to focus on it, and that's where that technique comes in the most handy, because you force yourself to get some work done before you worry about the other things. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to self-regulate, ignoring your phone for those 25 minutes, putting it in another room is so essential. And it's something that we often trick ourselves into thinking, oh no, like I can work with this right beside me, or I can do this at the same time. But just completely dedicating 25 minutes, is the best advice I've had. And whenever I'm struggling with something, that's what I go to, and I find I'm able to finish or be more productive than other methods.
And that's been working out well for you so far?
Yeah, so far, so good. Just 25 minutes is really enough to get into something, mm-hmm. Get something done, and still be in tune with yourself, because sometimes we work too hard to a point that we realize we neglected hydration or mm-hmm. like hunger or all of these.
Or movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You. And it's good not just for your studies, but also for your overall well-being, because you actually wake up and you say, oh, I'm hungry, I'm stiff, I'm thirsty, mm-hmm. I'm gonna deal with these things, and yet you still had enough time to be productive with your schoolwork or your studies.
And is it are you glad that you're at home with your family right now, Miles?
Yes, that's one thing that has been nice. I found at first, during the most stressful time of exams, our house isn't huge. It took a bit of an adjustment getting used to the background noise, mm-hmm. whether it be music or just other people on phone calls. But that only took like a few days or a week before I kind of settled in. I found the places in my house that I studied the best. And overall, having my family there is great. They're my best friends. We love every night watching a show or mm-hmm. a movie together, and making sure that we eat meals together mm-hmm. is having, definitely something that I'm grateful for.
Yeah, creating new traditions and creating new routines, I think, and trying to have like the best of experience within these very uncertain times, I think, is such a wonderful and comforting way to be right now.
Yeah, definitely. You just have to be thankful for what you have. And like you said it perfectly, yeah, make the best mm-hmm. Out of very difficult, unprecedented times.
Absolutely. Miles, I hope you're going to come and join me again. I love leaving this podcast doors wide open for everyone to come back, and because topics that we're talking about are so interesting and so wide-ranging. So it would be a delightful experience if you were to come back and have another conversation with me in a couple of months' time to tell me where you're at with everything.
Yeah, that would be great. This has been a pleasure. Thanks, Ruhi.
Thank you, Miles. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget to follow us on social media @RuhiSleep on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thank you for listening.